Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 424 of the Roguecast, recorded July 18th, 2023. The biggest Blorco ever.
We're back. That's all I got.
Back from...
From last week.
It's like, we haven't left, have we?
No, we've been here.
Is there anything going on? We had a flood. We dried up the flood.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, you know what? Last week we had all the fans going, and this week they did a very good job. I don't know if we want to say who it was.
Yeah, Black Hill Restoration, if you guys have any... If, God forbid, you have any need for water mitigation or anything, these guys are great. They were affordable. They were quick. They're one of our customers.
Yeah,
and we recommend them.
Yeah, when I think of like kind of the tooth pulling that went on with our massive flood from a couple years ago, and how quickly this was resolved, and you know it's this wasn't as bad, of course, but it's like they did a really quick job, basically by what Saturday I think.
Saturday was done.
The fans were out, and now they're just touching up stuff. It's a really good job.
Yeah, we ran our board game today with no fans running.
It's funny because we have seen kind of the worst case scenario, like 2 inches of standing water in the store on our one of the busiest shopping days of the whole year.
Yep.
It's something like this is not quite as much of a blow as it would have once been.
I've been through so much trauma at this point.
it's like, sure, it's one more. Whatever. We're done with it. That was last week.
Yep.
Moving on.
Yep.
What's next?
What's next?
Ray J. Bartlett, what's next?
But anyway, I don't know. What do we got? There's some new games. There's some new coolness.
Yeah, so a couple new games. We got a couple Kickstarters. We've got Search for Lost Species, which is a game from Renegade Press. They're the ones who do like the Transformers and G.I. Joe and all those. They have a ton of board games. One of their board games was Search for Planet X, which is a game where you're basically trying to find a lost planet. This is a new iteration of that. It uses an app, and it is based on a real search for lost species in like Africa and South America. So if you like sort of nature-themed games, and it's a deduction kind of game. It's not like, not social deduction, not like Werewolf, but a game where you're like, you're trying to use the clues you've got to figure out where this lost species is. And then the other one we got Plangea, which is a D&D 5e setting.
That's like a prehistoric magic setting.
Prehistoric, yes. So, but it's got all like, we were looking through it, Dave, the other day, and it's like, the elves are like these dreamwalkers, and dwarves are half stone, and
gnomes are like, it's a little bit like the sort of Dark Sun ones where they're like not the cannibals, but they are like the sort of wild men.
Yep, and halflings are like the stealthy folk, and the humans are like all beast tamers. And then the Aboriginal species.
It is a really cool premise.
There's like a half ooze person who can like stretch a little bit. There's saurians who are basically dinosaur men.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's a theme of like prehistoric, but also like cosmic horror, like a little bit of Cthulhu, like, you know, these, all the gods are this terrifying force that you don't fully understand. It looks like a lot of fun. It's got really nice art, and it's definitely a different type. There's a, we've got the rule book and the adventure and the DM screen, and we also have like a slipcase set.
Who puts it out?
All together. It's Mongoose Publishing.
Right. Who do lots of good stuff.
Yep. We got the, they're doing some Zombicide expansions. Yeah. We had the Dark Knights Metal ones before.
Mm-hmm.
This week we got The Boys, which is,
really?
There's two of them. One is The Boys, and the other one is The Seven. They're superheroes.
Yeah.
And you can have them go up against zombies.
I mean, they did a whole Marvel version of it as well.
Next week I believe we're getting the Supernatural ones. So
have they yet done DC's Deceased?
No. They did Dark Knights and Death Metal instead.
I guess you can't have... it'd be weird. Is there any property that does both Marvel and DC games? You generally ally with one or the other, I guess.
I feel like there was, but now I can't think of one.
Like, Flux, does that have any...
No, Flux didn't have... Yeah, just had Marvel.
Isn't there a Flux Batman or something like that?
There was, you're right.
Okay, so yeah, some guys, if you're sort of a sprawling enough franchise, and there's a lot of those Flux games.
Yep.
They've got Deep Space Nine and Star Trek and all the other
sure
ones.
Munchkin
too.
Has done both, right?
Yeah, Munchkin's probably done both.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
Okay. Then we got a couple classic games, Diplomacy and Acquire, both from Renegade Games.
Yeah, I've heard of those.
These are long-running games. They're new versions. I don't know if they tweak the rules or if they're just like classic versions of them, but if you have someone who like will only play Monopoly, you should get Acquire, which is a better version of that game.
They also released the anniversary editions of all the Yu-Gi-Oh cards, is that right?
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
There's like the original five sets, I believe,
yeah.
As kind of a remastered set.
So we have right now more Yu-Gi-Oh booster options than we've had in ever,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
There's like probably what, like 6-8 boxes of choices out there.
Yep.
So good time for Yu-Gi-Oh players, or if you want to like catch up on cool early stuff that otherwise you wouldn't be able to. It's been out of print for years and years and years. So
yeah. All right, let's talk about comics for this week. Wednesday, July 19th. Let's start with Image's big release, Big Game, which is Mark Miller.
I will just on the outset say it shouldn't work for me.
It shouldn't work for me either.
And yet. It does.
So this is Mark Miller, artist Pepe Larraz, who worked on House of X.
Yep.
He is bringing together all his characters: Kick-Ass, Kingsman, The Magic Order, Huck, Nightclub, The Ambassadors, Starlight's in here, Nemesis is in here. Basically, he's doing a shared universe with all his previous existing comics.
Those weren't particularly ever, like, in any obvious way, written to be in a shared universe.
No, not at all. Before.
But you know what? It works.
It does.
So he is doing, Nick and I both, it's got sort of a planetary vibe. I don't know if, Dave, you remember the premise of Wanted, because I had forgotten. But the premise of Wanted, which is one of the
supervillains had won and hidden their, that they'd won.
So the supervillains won, and this is established early on in Big Game as well. Supervillains won, and they won to such an extent that they basically made it look like superheroes only ever exist as fiction.
Right,
and that's
right.
Why we have such a fascination for and kind they, of like
so
the
they,
superhero.
So they secretly run the world, mm-hmm. and this is an interesting premise. So basically, this is a thing where they're showing like these supervillains run by Wesley Gibson, who is the lead character of Wanted, who is now an older man.
Yep.
And he's talking to Nemesis, the evil Batman guy, and basically talking about how he is slowly watching the superheroes start to creep around, like time travelers, space heroes, super teams, because of the ambassadors.
Yeah.
Is the time travelers ones like Chrononauts or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, Chrononauts in there, Starlight.
Yep. So he's like, all this stuff that we thought we'd gotten rid of, this slowly creeping back, and we got to put him down hard. And at the same time, you've got someone who is recruiting... he's starting to sort of look at the hidden history.
Is it Prodigy?
Prodigy is his name.
He's the super smart guy.
And it feels very Planetary-esque. The sort of lost history kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is also some tie into Ambassadors. You see Kick-Ass in here, who he's a big old hero worship guy, so he's like wanting to be in the Ambassadors program because he wants to have superpowers. It's all really good. It works way better than we... Because Nick and I, we're both very mixed on Miller stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I'm not a big fan. I used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to, like, seek his stuff out, but it always came with this kind of, like, very violent...
yeah, and this is... This has that.
It does have elements of it, but I like the larger game at play. I think putting all these people in the same universe is an interesting... feet.
I've seen a different version of this. Mark Miller isn't really on my radar, but I remember a couple years back, what's his name, Terry Moore,
mm-hmm.
did a comic that brought together all of his Strangers in Paradise and all his other books.
See that,
and I was like, that's a weird mix, but it actually ended up being pretty good.
Yeah, in my brain that doesn't work, but I mean, obviously it did.
Yeah, yep,
yeah. This is really pretty good. I'm curious to see where it goes from here. I love a good shared universe. You know, if you can do that well, which I think they did well.
And if you have Pepe Larraz doing
your
artwork.
Yeah, the art's really good.
Whatever.
Yeah. This, I think, for you and me, Nick, this was probably our favorite thing we read this week.
I think the next one might... There were three that were really high, but the next one that you're going to mention is definitely up there for
me. Tales of the Titans is a new 4-issue miniseries. I don't know if they're all written by the same creative team or not.
One can only hope.
I didn't think they were.
But I don't think they are.
Yeah, I think they're...
I think each one has a wholly different creative team.
But the creative team on this first one is focused on Starfire.
Which, by the way, it's a callback to, in the 80s, the solo specials that spotlighted the Titans back then.
Is written by Shannon Hale and Dean Hale, the writers of Teen Titans Beast Boy, Teen Titans Raven, and Teen Titans Beast Boy Loves Raven.
Right, the YA graphic novels that kind of exist on their own.
Wildly popular YA. We sell more of these than any other Teen Titans.
Well, dang it, now I have to go read those because I was really enamored with the writing in this book.
So this is Starfire, folks. It also has art by Javier Rodriguez,
which
you might know from History of the Marvel Universe, from Spider-Woman.
Right.
He's a great artist.
Right.
And I think, Nick, you and I like this better than Dave. I think we both really, really enjoyed this.
But I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, too.
Well, I think it takes the Starfire from the comics and Starfire from Teen Titans.
And sort of merges them
a little bit.
When you say Starfire from Teen Titans, you're talking about the cartoon.
I meant Teen Titans Go. Basically taking
Teen Titans Go, the wacky one?
I mean, there's definitely elements of that character in the
Teen Titans
the pages.
And Teen Titans Go are not that far apart. It's just that the Teen Titans fans really hated Teen Titans Go because it was
I think they basically took...
Which, basically, I'm saying, Nick, if you say it's like Teen Titans Go, people will run from it in droves.
But I don't think they should. But I understand that that is
definitely... It's
definitely
not wacky like that.
No,
like, it's mostly a grounded character
story.
They
definitely dial it back.
So as a basic premise here, Corey, Starfire... is called away on a mission with do you say Tamaranians?
Tamaran.
And they've got, like, you know, their planet got destroyed. I'm a little loose on my history of it all, but there's new settlements that they've taken up.
Yep.
And there's a problem which essentially amounts to something that was very much like a real world problem that we have, which is landmine problems. Their best land that they need is covered with landmines from some previous combat on this world. And it's not just normal landmines. These are weird, like, freaking living landmine squid things
that
kill the livestock.
Yep.
She's got to go help them out, but she's also sort of dealing with some issues, which is kind of having to do with... I thought it was interesting, like, people keep calling her the princess, the alien princess, and stuff like this. And she's become kind of resentful of it, where it just reminds her of her lost planet. It's almost like a sort of somewhat more realistically handled how, you know... Princess Leia didn't talk about, like, Alderaan a lot in Star Wars, you know, that there was just no time for it, kind of, as those stories played out. But, like, this is kind of like, yeah, this is her feeling that thing, and so she's like, please stop calling me that, I don't like it. And she's, it kind of is a running thematic throughout it.
Yep. It's very cute, it's very, it's a really good take on the character, and it's got great art. Yeah, I think this is a really good read, but it's...
Well for the series. I hope the other writers can kind of match it.
My favorite things of the 2 weeks were the super dark and nihilistic Big Game and the super optimistic and happy Starfire.
I would usually agree with Big Game being nihilistic, but there are... Millar has
characters in there, but Millar has a tendency toward nihilism, and I don't know that I would bet on the heroes winning this one.
Maybe not. Maybe he'll surprise. We'll but, the Starfire one
is
the
heroes win, it'll be by doing something, some tricky move and punching a villain in the dick.
Millar also wrote that great Superman story.
What Superman story?
Wasn't it the one... Oh, crap.
Did like Huck or something?
No. Like, didn't he write, like, Superman. Adventures of Superman? The
Hero Superman.
I mean,
Adventures,
there's a bunch of good standalone issues.
He knows how to write a hero.
When he's writing a cartoon character version of him.
Yeah.
But also, I bet I could go back at that and read that and still find some stuff that, that was him.
But they're going to do one of these issues for each of the Titans?
There's only four of them, so not all each. Raven's next.
Kind of hitting
then
the icons.
Maybe Cyborg and Beast Boy?
That makes sense. Robin Nightwing has enough of his own time.
Yeah. So yeah, that'd be my guess. And but we don't know.
No one cares about Wally.
Wally has his own book.
he's had his own book since 87. Off and on.
There is a new anthology series, Harley Quinn, Black, White, and Redder.
This is the second Black, White, and Red.
Yeah, it's one of those art-centric ones where, you know, it's black and white artwork, but with lots of red splashes and accents.
And because they do these short stories, they tend to get, like, big creators who don't have a lot of time to work on, like, a full series.
So you could do, like, a 12-page or an 8-page sequence or whatever.
And I don't usually read those, but both of you guys had read them and said there was some good stuff, and I'm glad I did. The lead story with Chip Zdarsky and Kim McGuire is a delight, and I don't want to say too much about it, just it's worth a read.
I mean, I think we can say a basic premise because it's a fun hook.
But that's the whole story.
It's literally page one is what the plan is.
All right.
Harley is trying to break into the Fortress of Solitude.
Yep. Then there's a Leah Williams, the Tasha Bustos story, which is a really, really nice art from Bustos, who's the co-creator of Moon Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul Scheer... who is a comedian, actor. Yeah, he's in a
podcaster.
And that second story, by the way, was kind of an interesting one that flashed back to her pre-Harley Quinn days when she was, like, a high school gymnast, but, like, was, like, kind of getting, like, really sort of abusive treatment along with the whole class of, you know, trying to make the, you know, the finals in the gymnastics competitions and stuff. And, you know, like a little of that Harley side of her coming out even way back when is a pretty cool premise.
It is.
Yeah. Anyway, it's good. All three stories I liked, so... there's a new Hawkgirl series.
This is actually, even though they are doing, what's the nightmare thing? I always forget
Night Terrors.
Night Terrors. This is a Dawn of DC book, right?
Yep.
This is just,
yep.
This is, there's still going to be maybe a few that sneak out during this, so this is the, yeah,
this
just
like
the launch of a new...
5-issue mini or
six
something?
6-issue mini, new writer, I don't recognize the name, Jadzia Axelrod.
I thought she was the person who wrote that, that YA thing, it's not like Galaxina, but it's something like
Oh,
that.
I think you're right, Galaxy, yeah.
Galaxy. That was actually previewed on Free Comic Book Day,
right.
I think.
Right, okay.
Although, was it this Free Comic Day, or was it a year ago Free Comic Book Day?
It was a year ago Free Comic Day.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that character actually plays a role in this.
There's a new Blade book that is an homage to the movie in the early going. It's Blade versus Vampire. I mean, you know what you got with Blade. It's Blade versus Vampire.
Sure.
There's a Moon Knight spinoff, Moon Knight City of the Dead. It's by the guy who did the Savage Avengers series. It is introducing Layla, a.k.a. What's her name?
Red Scarab?
Scarlet Scarab.
Scarlet Scarab. It's alliterative.
Into the continuity. She was introduced as the mercenary in the latest Jed McKay book. But
right.
This is the first appearance in continuity of her as Scarlet Scarab.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Having not finished the Moon Knight series,
yes.
Although I'm going to, I don't mind spoilers at this point. Does she have the Scarlet Scarab identity in
yes,
the show?
It shows up in the show.
Interesting. Okay.
That's
cool.
Where it showed up in the first place. And
I've seen the character.
It's one of the cooler things, and it was like, oh, that's a cool idea. They should bring that in the comics, and now they are.
There we go.
There's a new one-shot called Impact Winter Rook. This is an Image book. This is based
on Impact Winter?
Impact Winter, yes.
Okay.
It's based on an Audible original that is basically a post-apocalyptic vampire story.
Okay.
And this goes back to sort of do this, some origin stuff, because it is a vampire story set in olden, like, Viking times, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. 410 AD in Britannia.
You know, I was thinking impact sounds like impact of meteor, winter sounds like nuclear winter. Is that... That surely has been done before with vampires, that, you know, if you blot out the sun with, like, a nuclear winter, they could just have a field day?
That is probably what the Audible story is about.
Maybe so.
Would be my guess. Scrapper is a new Image book that is maybe fans of Stray Dogs, not Stray Dogs.
What's Stray Dogs is what it was called,
they want to look into is a couple of talking, genetically enhanced dogs in a future where, like there's a sort of a AI-filtered, it's with a G word, when you're taking a neighborhood and making it
gentrification.
Yeah, it's basically an AI gentrification program.
Oh, that's going to actually happen.
And
that's happening.
And it is from the point of view of dogs who are trying to help their people against this.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
It's
cyberpunk with
superhero
cyber pup. It's cyber pup,
but he's got like superpowers and stuff too.
It's still cyber pup.
It's very weird. And then there's a one of our annual Street Fighter swimsuit specials, which. Dave, you and I have both remarked, I don't know any of these characters.
Yeah, I think you can look around and you can find, there's Ken and Ryu.
There's a Blanka.
I was pretty sure I saw Chun-Li almost always in it. But there's enough characters that are not the kind of iconic Street Fighter characters most of them I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, if you like boobs and swimsuits...
There you go.
There you go.
But, like, you know, to be fair, they have lots of bros in there, too.
Yeah, this time.
Is there not?
Not very much.
Pretty sure I saw some. You said Blanca?
Yeah, but it's mostly boobs and girls.
Okay. Well, but as a general rule, I feel that they have done solid time to show muscular men in oil as well.
Yes. there's a TMNT Last Run and Lost Day special. This is the actual... Because the other one's coming out, The Lost Day or whatever, is a prequel. This, we think, is a sequel.
Yes, it for sure is. I know from the sign and stuff I made and a little looking up I did. Basically, it's like the epilogue to Last Ronin. So I feel like this one, is maybe kind of like more important than the other than the prequel is probably. Yeah. If you want to find out, oh, what happened after the immediate events, who, you know, what do those characters do? This is it.
Yeah.
This, and it's just a one shot, so that's kind of cool.
IDW also is starting Star Trek Day of Blood. This is the crossover between the Star Trek and the Star Trek Defiant series. For those who don't know, there's a the central story of this is that someone's going around killing all these godlike aliens.
Yep.
It is revealed, spoilers, to be Kales.
Yep.
Not the Klingon god or whatever, but a cloned Kales who apparently was a warrior, and now he is the emperor of the Klingon Empire, and he has decided to kill all the other gods.
I believe this may actually harken back to a TNG episode that had Kales reborn. And I haven't watched it in a billion years, but I think that was like sort of a standalone episode. And I think in the end, the character seemed like was going to become nothing.
Yep.
But this is I think it looks like years later he became something.
Well, this is definitely they're picking up on things that like everything from Voyager to DS9 to Next Generation.
I know that they wanted to really kind of bring in characters from all the different iterations, at least that existed in this timeline. Like, I don't think we're going to see anybody from Enterprise, because that would have been a couple hundred years
right
before this. But I think as much as they can within the reasonable continuity.
So what has happened is that the Theseus, which is the experimental ship that Sisko's been running, which was looking into the God Killer thing, Worf split off from them and stole the Defiant with his own renegade crew to go and do his own things.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
just Worf things.
Because of this threat, that they are now in this Day of Blood one shot, forced to come together and work together again. And so you've got Sisko, Data, Crusher, Shax from Lower Decks.
Yeah, that's wild. But it's like presented as a somewhat more realistic take on it.
Tom Paris, Montgomery Scott, aka Scotty, old Scotty.
Yep.
Then you got Worf, Ambassador Spock. Commander Sela from the Romulans.
Yeah.
Lore, Ro Laren.
Sela is the one that's the alternate universe version of, or daughter of Yar, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then B'Elanna Torres, which is kind of funny because Torres and Paris are married.
Right.
And they have a kid. And they both get together and they're like, who's looking after the kid? Like, we're both off on these adventures. There's a lot of fun. Data and Lore meet up for the first time in a while. Martok is in here, Chancellor Martok. Like, it is full on, tons of cool Star Trek references. A really like big scale. You know how the Star Trek movies were always like too big in scale, really?
Yeah.
But like a good two parter on the show could be the same scale and work.
Yeah.
This feels like a good two parter.
Nick, just as an aside, when you get back to watching Deep Space Nine,
yeah,
I'm excited for you to see more stuff with Martok.
Man, that stuff's like later, like season six and seven.
But he starts showing up, I think, a little earlier. He
really comes into his own the last couple seasons.
Right. But he is an interesting Klingon character that proves to be like very watchable.
Okay.
And ultimately, like a real, really cool character.
I super recommend this series. I've been recommending it to no avail, yeah. But I recommend this. And if you want to catch up, the Star Trek Volume 1 Godshock, the first, I think, six issues, yeah, of the series that reintroduces Sisko, sets up the Theseus, sets up the Kales and all that. That comes out this week as a hardcover.
It's a really nice-looking hardcover,
it's
too.
It's a really good read. Like, this came at the right time. It's what part kind of spurred me to go ahead and finish my Deep Space Nine watch. Mm-hmm. And it is, like, if you've been jonesing for the more of that after, you know, Deep Space Nine kind of got ignored in the post era,
right.
Or if you finish watching Picard and you're like, I want more of this next gen era, this is good stuff,
right? Like that, you know, whatever happened to when Scotty came to the next gen future or got materialized in it,
right?
You know, there's an episode with him, and then unless you're reading like the novels and stuff,
right,
that's kind of it.
Yeah,
so like you can see the further adventures of and yes, Ambassador Spock is like, that's pretty notable.
Yeah. There's also new characters in there. There's an Andorian. There's a new Vulcan. There's a...
Boo. I hate new characters. No. That's
There's a Volume 4 of Radiant Black came out this week.
Yep.
So if you've been catching up, that's another one of those.
That has definitely been a, like, quite the breakout series. Some people do the shared universe aspect. It's called the Massive Verse in continuity. But like, just on its own, you know, we kind of somewhat compared this to Invincible, which is to say, if you're kind of looking for like a indie superhero comic that's very approachable but has some more edge than you might get at Marvel or DC, or just a different vibe than all that very Marvel DC stuff, Radiant Black is probably the book to check out. And, yeah, they're now into Volume 4, so you got some stuff to read.
Yeah. And then George R. R. Martin presents Wild Cards Now and Then, which is a new story from the Wild Cards superhero shared universe, featuring a pair of ace heroes, are called Aces, Earthwitch, and Curveball, who are investigating a charity claiming to provide education and medical care for those affected by the Wild Card virus. So it's in Brazil. So it's like an adventure by two aces working for the UN. It's going to be an unusual superhero thing. Yeah.
Every time we talk about Wild Cards, I kind of find myself wanting to go back and look in on it.
Yep.
It was, famously what George R. R. Martin edited and contributed to.
Yep.
This kind of realistic-ish superhero series. That was always done in the anthology format. So lots of contributors, lots of recurring characters, story that evolved over time, had elements of, both episodic and having arcs, and still periodically crops up. I think at one time they were working on a show. I don't know if it's happening.
I don't either. I would watch the show. It's a great setting.
Yeah, it's got some pretty memorable characters in it. And it doesn't, I would say it's really not like any superhero stuff that's come out so far.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of, it's kind of grounding in the real world. It's like, well, yeah, we've seen Watchmen and stuff. This is still different from that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, kind of a unique take. All right.
What else?
That's everything.
I did want to mention, although it's a slightly frustrating thing for us this week because we're waiting for that. We didn't get our full order. But, what is it? Void
Rivals number 2.
Rivals number 2
yeah.
comes out tomorrow, or today as you're listening to this. That's Kirkman's book. That's his sci-fi comic that's also going to tangentially touch on Transformers stuff.
Part of the Energon universe.
Yep. The Energon universe. We like the first issue. And
really like the second issue.
Right? I like the second issue,
which... it kind of, he's having fun with his cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Because there's parts of it that are, play like a kind of, it reminded me, Randy, of like EC comic sci-fi stories.
Yeah, I see that.
Where there's a little bit of a sci-fi fantasy element, but there's also a little bit of that enemy mine realism, you know, or at least quasi-realism. Not hard sci-fi, but a little bit more than they have. But you will see a kind of a character that's, Not a full Transformer or something.
I read an advanced copy of this, and I told you guys, I'm like, hey, I'm not sure there's any Transformer stuff in the second issue. And then Nick revealed that the last page is like, no, that's a deep, deep, deep cut that I had no idea was
a deep cut. But it's like what if you know the meme about Blorko and the Marvel movies.
Yeah,
it's one of those where it's like you might need to have it explained or Google it.
It's the biggest Blorko ever.
But it does actually indicate that one of the things I thought the approaches I thought they might be doing, which is to look at the Cybertron stuff that was like when they did the Transformers movie in 86 or whatever, and then afterwards the cartoon started being set on Cybertron in the future, and then you saw more alien races and you kind of got a vibe of like, oh, they shared this universe with other people. This is starting to feel like it's like a more thoughtful version of that take, and that makes me interested.
I want to see
what it is to live in a world where Cybertron would probably be this scary-ass... It'd be like a war-torn country, where you're like, oh, don't step foot in there. It is like the Middle East of space, It is a giant landmine of dangers.
Right.
But also, high technology, probably lots of... And, you probably got these very noble people like Optimus that you might want... Anyway, still a lot of guesswork as to how it's all going to all come together, but it's a pretty cool second issue, and hopefully we'll get all our copies.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some news. Gentlemen, let's talk about Black Dynamite.
All right, this is Black Dynamite. When did that come out? 2003, 2005, 2007.
I didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
Nick, you're on your phone.
Sure, I can pull that up.
Black Dynamite's a funny movie. It has Michael J. White, send up of
Blaxploitation
movies.
2009.
Okay. Right. And those guys are making a new movie.
Yep. Now, 14 years later, we're getting Outlaw Johnny Black.
Right. Not a sequel, just but same star.
It feels like it's in the same universe. Like if we learn that Johnny Black is the
ancestor.
The ancestor of Black Dynamite, I won't be shocked.
Randy, a lot of little girls have daddies named Black Dynamite. By the way, if you haven't seen Black Dynamite, go ahead and see it.
It's great.
I will say that I can tell from this trailer, which is it's a Western with also martial arts and stuff in it.
Yes, there's martial arts.
And I guess I'd say a primarily black cast.
Yep.
And very, like you said, very much vibing like Black Dynamite, a.k.a. that was like, you know, a comedic Shaft.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Dynamite is a little hit and miss as a movie. Some of the, not every joke lands.
But it's pretty good.
But it's pretty good. Like, everybody should see it.
This looks like a lot of fun. It's vibing a little bit like, weirdly, like Quentin Tarantino's Westerns that are a little bit self-aware, and also, yep, like Blazing Saddles.
Yep. It looks like he is a Western badass who has to disguise himself as a preacher.
As a priest, yeah.
As a priest, yeah. And then in town he gets him embroiled in, like, they found, like, oil on the property.
Yeah, to help the citizenry defend themselves.
Gotta help the citizenry defend themselves, and,
There's a great bit in the trailer where the woman asks, she's like, doesn't the Bible say turn the other cheek? And he says, maybe, probably, I don't know. And he's dressed as a preacher at the time, which
right,
is great.
Yeah, right. And there's also a thing of him, like, I guess making all the women in the congregation horny, and, yes, like, she's licking her lips,
yep,
while he's, like, giving a sermon.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
And lots of shooting belt buckles and guns and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
It looks
like a blast.
It looks fun.
It looks fun. We got some news right at the end of last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about. That is that Superman Legacy has cast 4 heroes, as we're guessing, relatively small guest stars.
Superman Legacy. It's funny because the name, there's some, I feel like I hear Legacy attached to so many different things. Yep. This is James Gunn's Superman movie.
Right. It's, yeah, James Gunn's Superman movie. It is the essential launching of, for whatever they keep saying, that the DC, like the Blue Beetle and everything else is going to be in continuity, Superman Legacy is the launch of Gunn's DC.
Right. Things will probably sink or swim based on this movie. And I think it's, in a weird way, it's almost too big to fail. Like, I think he's going to, like, okay, I feel like,
have some faith in DC. They can fail.
In Gunn. Listen, Gunn, I think, worst case scenario, it'll be like whatever one's least favorite Guardians of the Galaxy movie,
yeah,
is. All of which were still good.
Yeah. No, I have a fair amount of faith in Gunn, but I will say, I don't think DC is susceptible to too big to fail after
Suicide Squad failed.
Like, Flash managed to
fail. Did it fail? I don't think it creatively failed.
No, not creatively, but I think at the box office.
I don't give a fuck about that.
But, so, they've said that this is going to be Superman balancing his Kryptonian heritage with a human upbringing.
Yep.
He is the embodiment of truth, justice, and the American way. He is kindness in a world that thinks kindness is old-fashioned. That is all the right words. That's what I want to hear.
You need to listen to the interview with Michael Rosenbaum.
All right.
Yeah. Everybody, Michael Rosenbaum does a podcast where he interviews his, I don't know, celebrity friends or something. And he has like an hour and a half long interview recently with James Gunn where he talks a lot about superhero movies and DC and other stuff. And it's really interesting. I think it will give you more confidence.
Well, from what I've understand through interviews and stuff that Gunn has given, and he is in like perpetual like answering things on the internet.
Yeah,
he seems
to really dislike the very misinformation out there.
Yeah, he is like constantly doing little interviews with people. But from what I understand, this universe will already have been in sort of
in motion.
Yes, yes.
We're not going to get a bunch of origin stories.
No, this
stories.
Is an origin. And this is a fully formed entity.
I would imagine somehow the story that Gunn wants to tell with Superman will kind of send him around to various portions of the DC universe. And this is where we're going to get people like Guy Gardner, as played by Nathan Fillion.
Yes, Guy Gardner played by Nathan Fillion. By the way, it's worth noting, there's Superman, and we talk about their Superman and Lois casting, but Superman is David Corenswet, and Lois is Rachel Brosnahan, which I think is great casting,
yeah,
in both stores.
Don't know either, but they looked good in pictures, and I've heard okay stuff.
Fillion got announced, and then shortly thereafter, what they announced was to be Guy Gardner, not Hal Jordan,
right,
which is Nick's favorite Green Lantern.
It's true. And I like Fillion.
I think, you know, Captain Hammer, I think, is the watchword,
yes,
here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody who remembers how he played him, a loutish superhero bro.
And Gunn has said that he's going to have...
What was that thing called?
Dr. Horrible.
Dr. Horrible, yeah. At least is a good baseline for somebody being Guy Gardner.
He won me over when Gunn said that he will have the bowl cut.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Guy Gardner.
They also cast...
it's an unusual group of characters.
So they've also cast Isabella Merced, who I don't really know, but she was in Transformers Last Night and the Sicario sequel. And
let's just
she's playing Hawkgirl.
Yeah, let's just quick say who all the other heroes. So it's Hawkgirl, Metamorpho,
and Mr. Terrific.
And Mr. Terrific from the JSA. And that is a very unusual spectrum. Two of those people are in the JSA, but we don't know if the JSA are going to be in this.
We don't know, yeah.
But it's like, you know how, like, normally if you make a Superman movie, if there's going to be a guest star, it's like, it's Batman or Wonder Woman or the JLA. This is all slightly off the beaten path choices. And it does sound like what you were saying, Nick, which is a wholly formed DC universe where there's, like, heroes and villains running around out there, yeah. Where, you know, I don't know, one of y'all, I think, at some point was like, what if Mr. Terrific could be working at Star Labs? Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's just in, like, part of the mystery, and he's the JSA is mentioned.
I think that's extremely clever in the sense that we haven't seen that perspective with movies.
Before we get too deep into the overall, I want to say real quick what the other casting is, because it's important. Anthony Carrigan, who is on Barry, he's a fantastic character in that. He's been cast as Metamorpho. I think he can be a great Metamorpho.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy playing Mr. Terrific is named Eddie Gathegi. I'm probably mispronouncing that. But he was on For All Mankind, Apple TV's, like, season 3 of that. But also, you may know him, he played Darwin in X-Men First Class.
Oh, yeah.
I have not seen that movie in a long time, and I don't remember it.
But anyway, I think all this casting seems like a good idea. But yes, what that means for the larger question is, what does that mean for, we've got all these characters.
Well, like I was saying, I think that makes the DC Universe unique in the sense that they can just jump in and tell stories and kind of, something that Marvel wasn't able to do. Every beginning Marvel movie was a origin story.
Yeah.
Right. And you also kind of had to, like, if there were going to be some notable villains with powers, you had to kind of explain, this is kind of from the, they were using tech from the Chitauri attack on New York, or this guy got his powers from, you know, like, it was very specific things. You definitely didn't quite get that sense of a world of supervillains.
Right. Here you can just show Superman flying by and seeing Hawkgirl fighting Dr. Phosphorus.
Right.
So we think.
It's probably going to be something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that Fillion...
Unless there's a team that has Metamorpho and Mr. Terrific and Hawkgirl on
it. There could absolutely be that team. It could be Outsiders.
It could be.
But with Superman, that'd be a weird thing to do.
Yeah. I honestly think it's just going to be fleshing out the DC world.
Yeah. Well, they're going to do what they kind of do with Justice League Unlimited, I think. There'll be a little backdropper. They'll need them for a mission-specific thing. It's kind of the way, Dave, that you use them in your RPGs.
Right.
We have these characters show up, and you know why they show up? Because they're cool, and it's fun to see them for a minute.
Right. Yeah, and it's fun to see some characters that you haven't seen in a while, or maybe ever.
Yeah, honestly, if the news with the...
Metamorpho was a good, weird cow.
this is the complete opposite of what was going on with the Snyderverse. Because if the news was they've cast a Wonder Woman and a Batman, and even like a like a Hal Jordan or whatever, I'd be less excited about it because I'm like, stop trying to run before you can walk. But casting some sort of B-list and C-list heroes
to just sort of fill out the world, that's
a great idea.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take the focus off making the Superman movie, which you need to do because, yes, there's been a few, but there hasn't been a good one since, like, Superman 2.
That's kind of true.
That's very true.
Somewhere out there, someone is doing his stretching exercises, readying to defend the Brandon Routh one. It's like, excuse me.
Brandon Routh was greatest Superman on Legends of Tomorrow.
And I mean, I agree. Somewhere is also there's a Snyder bro gearing up to go to bat for Man of Steel. I'll say this, I can watch all of those things, I think there probably hasn't been a really good one since Superman 2 in 1980, whatever. One of those things that bodes well.
Yeah.
There's so much weirdness about some of the choices that they made, but this is good news, ish.
Well, you know me. I'm an internal optimist when it comes to DC, so this, of course, makes me very happy.
Yeah, you're a little sunshine.
Yeah, always. I'm always thinking the best, always expecting the best. But yeah, this makes me a little less wary.
It makes you want to believe.
That's what Superman should do.
Sure.
Let's jump over to Marvel and the dumb thing they did.
What did Marvel did?
The Miss Marvel stuff.
Right.
So, like, as with Fallen Friend, we last week were like, you know what? I don't like the way they did it. They killed it. Killing off Miss Marvel was dumb. But Fallen Friend was good.
And then there was the
post-credit sequence that turned up online right after we podcast.
Yes, because you had to do the QR code. But
it more or less confirmed kind of what we thought guessed, in a kind of a fun way. I actually still haven't seen it.
Oh, have you not read it?
But can we say what it is? Right.
So basically, Wolverine and who else?
They're all coming out of the mosque, and
it's Wolverine and somebody else who are mad at Cyclops.
Miles.
Oh, it's Wolverine and Miles
because champions
who are griping at Cyclops. Like, why weren't you at the funeral? Like, you were. She loved you, and you guys were on the champions together. And Cyclops is like, no, I loved her too. And like, why weren't you at the funeral? He's like, you'll see. And yeah. It's very much as a they're going to bring her back in on
right.
Krakoa.
And we so know it's X-Men stuff. Confirmed. We know and then, that somehow she'll end up a mutant.
About 3 days later, Marvel dropped the official news, which I miss finding things out in the comics.
That's just not the world we live in.
Honestly, even if it mostly, you know, even if we could be invisible to that or you avoided the news, yeah. In our job, we have to know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying, it is a little annoying that all this stuff gets announced press release first.
She was killed, and 2 weeks later, we knew she was coming back as a mutant.
Yeah, and indeed, they announced. And, so she is coming back in a new Ms. Marvel series called Ms. Marvel the New Mutant, I think is what
yeah,
it's
that's
called.
What it is.
And it is the new, she has a new costume that's very X-Men focused.
Yep.
Right, still has like the scarf and some of the other elements of the costume.
To some extent. It's been redesigned by Jamie McKelvey, who designed the original costume. And the writers, this is the interesting part, is Iman Vellani, the actress who's playing Ms. Marvel, and was admittedly, she cosplayed as Ms. Marvel. She's a huge fan.
Yeah.
And also the writers who worked on the show.
So it's kind of the show's team bringing some of their energy. I think that's not a bad idea.
No, I don't think it's a bad idea.
That means that she's not like on her own. She'll be working with professional writers.
Right. It's not an actress writing, which would feel like
the interview that.
But she'll probably be like giving the character kind of her voice or something of that.
Yeah. The interview that they gave hit all the buttons for me in the sense that they're not getting rid of the inhuman aspect. That's still definitely a part of her.
They said they're not changing her powers, but I think they said she's still going to have the stretchy powers.
Yeah,
but she might have some other
she
power.
Might have the energy power and the stretchy power maybe the same.
We'll
way
see how that works.
Yeah.
I'm fine with this. I mean,
I'm mostly fine with it, except I think the new costume really overemphasizes the X-Men stuff, which is too bad.
No. And the original costume is like it's a legit great costume, and this one I would look at and be like, that's pretty good.
It's fine, yeah. If you're gonna change a costume, improve it.
Let's be honest, Randy, you're just sour that it's Krakoa bringing her back.
I am sour about that. I don't want her tied into Krakoa.
But don't you agree about the costume though, right? It's not as
good. Oh, the costume is not as good. Yeah, no, it's. It reads for me a lot of like Kitty Pryde.
Yes.
And I want Ms. Marvel to have her own identity in a sense and not be wrapped up in.
Well, it's a kind of
X-Men.
A blue and goldish type thing. And of course, all the original X-Men and other incarnations sometimes have worn them as some version of that. And they probably want, but that Kitty Pryde thing is deliberate.
Oh, absolutely.
They will, that may even be exactly how it's done sort of in the movie, which is she's like, she takes the Kitty Pryde POV sort of thing. She comes, joins the team, learns what these crazy X-Men are and all that
stuff. I
mean,
for all we know, and like, they'll continue the Kitty Pryde thing, and in 3 issues she'll have a new costume because that's what Kitty Pryde did.
I'm very conflicted about this because there's stuff I absolutely hate. Her being killed off is dumb. Her bringing back through Krakoa is dumb. There was 100 different cool ways you could have given her mutant powers if you really wanted to. And I don't like her changing costumes.
You know what they should... I have a thought on the costumes. Come back to it.
But I'm conflicted. I want to get... I'm not just negativity.
Yeah.
The positivity of this... Iman Vellani loves this character. She gets this character. And so do the people who are writing the show. And so I think they're going to do a good job with it. And while I don't want her to be killed off, I'm glad that she's back. And that we're going to have what's probably a really good Ms. Marvel series out of it.
Well, and it might be a more high-profile Ms. Marvel series.
Right.
The G. Will Wilson series at its peak was selling very well.
It was.
But progressively with each thing, I personally couldn't get into the solid of the head
stuff. I fell off of it, too. And I think this has me more excited.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. I want more people to read Ms. Marvel because she's a great character. And I think... the actor and that writing team will give it the energy that will match the show and bring in more people.
I also have some thoughts on her with the X-Men, but Dave, what are you going to say about the costume?
You know, just the other day, a mutual friend of ours who has like an X-Men Facebook page, he was talking about how much he loves the blue and the gold uniforms, and me and somebody else were saying, well, we like him on, you know, early mutant teams, like, you know, original X-Men, the New Mutants and stuff like that. Generally, I don't want to see him on the grown-up X-Men.
Yeah.
But I was like, it'd be nice if they slightly codified that and they could use her story as an opportunity to do it. It's like, when you are training with the X-Men, the blue and the gold uniform is kind of a standard, some version, even though it can be individually tailored.
Yeah.
And then after 6 months or a year, when you're kind of more formally part of the team, you get your own look, and then hopefully they can give her, something badass.
Well, it should be graduation presents. Remember the New Mutants graduation presents were the costumes?
I forgot that.
The idea that you graduate from being a New Mutant to an X-Men and you get your own costume, I think that's a cool idea.
Am I the odd one out at this table who actually liked the codified, the blue and gold X-Men outfits from the early 90s?
I like the team outfits, but I think I prefer them to be individualized.
What I was thinking about,
what I'd really like is, you know what I thought the funnest for the Avengers jacket era?
Yeah.
I would love it if basically all the X-Men had the Frank Whiteley jackets that they could wear or not wear with their individual costumes. Like, instead of Rogue having a generic leather jacket she puts over her green and yellow, she has the X-Men jacket. And then Marvel could sell those jackets.
I mean, overall, I want them to be able to have their own color schemes and those jackets,
I don't know, black fits everything.
Yeah, but Rogue's brown bomber jacket looks cooler, I think, than the black jacket. By the way, Nick, I like the look of those were pretty well done, but I'd always err on the side of individuality for adult X-Men.
Oh, I mean, and I
but
love
were they
it.
Drawn well in that era? Yeah,
I think they all looked cool together.
Even that brief Jim Lee era where like Gambit and all those guys were in the black and yellow, that was a cool look.
Just not as cool as Gambit's regular.
I like teams and I like uniforms, so I can roll with a group.
You know, in this thread where we were talking about the costumes, I posted a picture from Quietly's era.
Yeah, I saw
The picture had Cyclops, Jean, and Wolverine in it, and they all had a slightly different version.
Wolverine's had no shirt.
So Cyclops was wearing the full uniform, which is to say he had there's like a black sweatshirt kind of thing, and then you wear the gold and black jacket over it.
Yeah.
Jean wasn't wearing a jacket. She just had on, the sweatshirt, a turtleneck kind of thing. And then here's Wolverine with his hairy ass, where he's just wearing the jacket, but he's got the chest hair flying.
It looks like Jamie Tart when he wore the jacket in Ted Lasso.
Anyway, I suspect, they will probably not make the cool choice that we have, but you think that might be a decent idea?
I think she wears it
for a while, and then she graduates, and either it's like, I guess at that point you don't want to go back to the original one because that would just feel a little weird. But, hopefully something that's a little more inspired than her X-Men, New Mutants-ish look.
I agree, but also I'm kind of looking forward to watching her interact with the X-Men. Because she has mostly interacted, other than Wolverine, who she met on his own. Wolverine's kind of outside. Wolverine is a kind of like Spider-Man guest starring. That's just like a rite of passage kind of thing. But she's mostly interacted with the Avengers side of the world.
Yeah.
And the young heroes. And I kind of like the idea of her interacting with the X-Men a little bit.
You know what I think would be a good dramatic energy? I want to see her and Rogue, because Rogue's running around with the powers of her idol that she stole from her when she was unsure of how to use her powers. Yeah. So, she, at the back in the 80s, it was like the biggest thing in the world for Ms. Marvel, or Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, that she had lost all her powers and memories to Rogue. Bitter enemies, and it's been patched since, but
to some extent, although they mostly don't interact.
Right, and if this kid was kind of just caught in the middle and not sure what to think about it, I kind of know Rogue is a good person, but, she did that? Ooh.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting story.
I also think what would be interesting is because Kamala and Carol have become friends, I think it would be interesting if Rogue and Kamala became friends, and then the three of them basically wound up bonding. I think that would be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
If she could basically bring the two of them together.
Yeah, that'd be a cool story to do.
So.
Honestly, it's one of those things where I'd be like, oh, that'd be a great opening story.
Yeah.
Or to have a subplot,
I also would love to see her have a relationship with Kitty. And and Kitty to sort of walk her through now I'm the veteran X-Men, but I remember being in this role and, being the new kid on the block and that kind of thing. And also Kamala comes to a different thing because she has a ton of experience as a hero.
Right?
So she's not like most of the New Mutants.
She is a bit like Spider-Man, or like how the reason Kitty didn't want to join the X-Men because she was, or New Mutants, because she was so experienced doing already X-Men
stuff.
She didn't
want to be an X-baby.
Yeah, you don't want to regress. Am I correct that maybe until Kamala Khan is now joining, that Dust would have been the only mutant who was notably a Muslim?
Yeah.
But
oh, man, they're bringing Dust again and use that.
Yeah, but which, by the way, I didn't realize that character showed up on, X-Men and the... Or Wolverine and the X-Men, animated thing.
Yeah.
And so that character's got some probably more development in the animated universe than in the regular comics.
Right.
But anyway, There's another opportunity. There's a lot of opportunities here.
Yeah.
Don't blow it, Marvel. There's kind of a lot riding on this, including like the connection to your MCU stuff. So, and obviously, it's not going to follow that closely. But yeah, don't screw it up.
Well, every time I see that Marvel's trailer in the theater, and I've seen it a few times now, Iman Vellali really, she totally gets Kamala. Like, that is the version of Kamala I wanted. Yeah. And this character is so good, and I don't want them to drop the ball. I feel like they've already done it. They've lost what made the character special since G. Willow Wilson left. And I want them to recapture that. And I hope that this works. All right. Nick, you were going to revisit Rise of the Beasts, because Dave and I talked about it, but you hadn't seen it.
You have to say Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Is there another Rise of the Beasts?
I don't know. Rise of the Beasts
sounds like... Transformers is a fairly important part of that title.
Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
There we go, yeah.
Short version, I liked it quite a bit. I did not love it as much as Bumblebee.
No, Bumblebee's better.
Bumblebee has a little bit more heart.
You know what? But there's stuff about it that I liked better than Bumblebee because it had the ensemble, and I thought they handled the ensemble pretty well.
They did. Although they underutilized a few characters and just gave like a couple of lines to a few of them that I wish had been a little bit more.
But Bumblebee had the focus to do that sort of Iron Giant ET kind of story, and then it's like that's a formula that if you do it pretty well, and they did it pretty well, it's hard to beat it.
I also talked to my wife after, and I'm like, how do they turn the asshole Pete Davidson that I could not imagine being around, like in an actual human person, into a character that I really, really enjoyed?
Yeah.
Because his take on Mirage was fun.
He was like arguably the star of the show.
In a lot of ways, he was.
Along with the human lead.
Also, Optimus was a big whiny baby.
He was a bit of a jerk in
it. He was.
As I was watching it, about halfway...
I understood the reason.
Right. He was supposed to have been, like, basically kind of... he had failed to get his guys back to Cybertron, and it was weighing on him. It's been years since
they
crashed.
7 years.
Yeah.
And they've been
stuck
here.
I understand that Nick Fury has done worse for the Skrulls in his world.
He has.
Anyway, so Optimus Prime, but I remember about halfway through this movie, I was like, man, Optimus is being real cranky. I really hope his character arc is that he kind of gets through that at the end.
Yeah. And it was.
And it was.
He got the T'Lalor there were definitely some elements that kind of was like a cyclical thing for him.
Even though this movie kind of ends with one of those big CG battles things, I felt like the choreography and the kind of the staging of it was pretty good, but also that there's a lot of satisfying moments in there.
Yeah. No, I never once was as confused as when I watched a Michael Bay Transformers movie.
Yes.
It was very smooth. I knew where
Actually,
the villain
yeah,
was.
Yeah, the direction of the action was always clear.
Even when they did, like, the wide open battlefield of... where were they? Were they in Brazil? Or no?
They were in South America somewhere, but I don't remember exactly where.
Just the open playing field that they had, and there were Unicron's minions, and...
There was multiple things. There was a special mission going on. There was the big battle. And then there's like, oh, is the cavalry coming?
They handled it well.
Yeah.
But
how'd you feel about human characters, Nick?
I liked the human characters quite a bit. I enjoyed Anthony Ramos.
Two leads, right?
It was Anthony Ramos's character
and Dominique Fishback.
Yeah. I liked both of them.
They were both great.
I liked her as sort of an archaeologist that was basically... interning or something.
Right. And was kind of getting overlooked and stepped on.
Yeah. By an overbearing idiot.
Yeah. A very, very relatable bad supervisor
kind of
person.
I
kind of
liked the anti-authority movement of this entire movie.
Right. I can't remember if we talked about it when we mentioned it before, but it is definitely a thing.
Yeah. I mean, in most Transformers movies, we have a military element or a police element or something that is a little more upfront.
Yeah.
Bumblebee had it with John Cena, but they handled it in sort of a more, I don't know, it was a better way.
Right. Michael Bay's stuff was basically recruitment ads.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
for sure.
It had,
and John Cena got
stuff.
To say their name is actually Decepticons.
Right.
No.
He got one of the all-time great lines in any Transformers movie.
Yes.
Possibly the greatest.
Yeah, but possibly.
But I really liked Anthony Ramos' character. You get a kind of good in with him at the beginning, trying to find a job, trying to help out his sick brother. There were small elements to a story that there was enough of that I was like, okay, I could care about that character.
Do you remember way back when Red Letter Media, a.k.a. Plinkett, was kind of spoofing like Phantom Menace and stuff like that, and talking about how there's not an obvious character,
yeah,
and that they didn't really quite have the character that's like the a little bit of an everyman, like Marty McFly kind of yeah. person who you can get behind. They did in this. It's like, yeah, it was kind of tropey, like, oh, the guy's got a sick brother and all this stuff. But I think the dialogue and stuff they gave him was actually pretty good.
Right, and the delivery was good. That
he brought a lot to it.
Basically, Mirage taking him on a joyride with cops following him. Yes. The scene
continuing
where Mirage...
the anti-establishment.
When Mirage multiplies himself and does his Mirage thing, and yeah. all the Anthony Ramos versions of him are, like, flicking the cops off.
Yes.
And, like, all this, that killed me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Very good moment. I was laughing and having a really good time in the theater, I know, when I saw this. And it was an energetic... It was, like, a lot of good, positive energy.
And also, Dave, they got to say, Maximals Maximize. And that was pretty badass.
Didn't they say that multiple times?
I think just the once
really?
Is when Ron Perlman does it.
Okay,
oh, that's right.
Okay. And Ron Perlman as Optimus Primal was pretty badass.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's always a good voice
yeah.
actor.
He is.
I
like the kind of slightly Tomb Raider-ish moments when they did some exploration
yeah.
in the middle of... there was, like, a big... what do you call it?
Well, there it's always about like some
fair going on of some sort. There was like some
oh
sort
yeah,
of
it
festival.
Was like a festival.
Yeah,
there's always a MacGuffin. We always
sure.
get some. This
yeah,
one's the
yeah.
transport.
We have
key.
To get the yeah blank.
However, I really liked how they handled the Maximals.
Mm-hmm.
As kind of a
they were like the secret guardians of the key.
Yeah, but also they were like.
Refugees
on another... They're basically to preserve life wherever they were. That was their modus operandi. I mean,
yep.
as what they do. And I thought that was really cool. And that was a way to handle characters that are not normally supposed to be in the same world as the regular Transformers.
Whole, yeah, they don't interact a ton.
I thought the Bumblebee fake-out was a little... kind of because they killed
him.
Scourge kills him like at the beginning.
Yeah.
However, I mean, when they said he needed a pump of energon, I was like, okay, they're gonna do that.
Yeah.
His return was badass though. Him a drop. Getting a drop.
He does an airdrop. Yeah, that's like a Navy SEAL style drop. And
makes Bumblebee pretty badass.
It does.
And it's a good needle drop too.
It is.
And I felt like they. If you say at some point, if you don't, like, play up too much like he's gone forever, there was, like, several times... They left the door open so you could see it.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't like, y'all said he was dead. They wanted us to feel sad, but they had left the door open.
I was sad and annoyed that they offed Airazor so quickly.
Yeah.
Did Airazor get offed off?
I mean, she was there, but I was like...
a pretty big part.
But I was like... That's a cool character, and you have Michelle Yeoh. Don't kill her.
But they had a lot of characters, and you can't not kill everyone because you want to have stakes.
Kill Rhinox, who said zero.
But then it would have no stakes. It wouldn't matter.
Right. What they've done is they've set it up so that they could do a Beast Wars movie that's more focused, but maybe has that now in the next one that they do, Beast Wars get the main role, regular Transformers somewhat more supporting role.
Oh, I did. The weird kind of the Transformers can morph into whatever car they need is a little weird, but I love how they did Mirage's original form as one of the things he switches into.
Yeah.
Does the F1 Formula Racing
yeah.
car. Peter Dinklage was fun as Scourge. I thought he was
yep.
a good villain.
Yeah. Danny Ross was fun as Wheeljack.
Yes. I forgot that was him until just now you said that. that made sense.
It was super fun.
Like, he was a little goofy as Wheeljack. It wasn't quite, like, Wheeljack is such one of the best animated characters and stuff like that
yeah.
from back in the day that I kind of wish he had been more like that. But it was a version that worked okay, I thought.
And then the big C-130 was a fun little...
Also a bit goofy,
fun,
but fun.
Yeah.
I
did not see that one coming. I also liked... They kept some things secret in the trailer, which I appreciate. These
yeah.
things. Like,
well, both those characters.
Wheeljack and what's his name? The big flying guy?
Oh, Air not Bomb? Slipstream.
Something. I
not
don't know.
Bombstrike.
I don't know, whatever it was. But, like, I didn't know either of those characters were in it, and that was very cool.
I knew Wheeljack was in it.
How'd you know that?
Probably toys, but I knew,
okay.
but I knew
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
So, I really enjoyed the movie. It's definitely worth watching. Better than any Bay movie, Transformed movie.
Yes.
I do want to talk about the Stinger.
Right.
Because
yeah.
I thought that was really cool and really well done. And part of me had to look up to see if Kirkman wrote it. Because I was like, this kind of feels that way.
So this is the stinger that said that the G.I. Joe is a special ops team in this world.
Well, and it also put G.I. Joe as a really good guy, because they're like, we're going to pay for your brother's surgery and all the stuff that he needs. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's kind of what like S.H.I.E.L.D. would do or something. Like, that's what I want.
Well, this much very much feels like putting G.I. Joe as the S.H.I.E.L.D. of the Transformers.
And also, I love that actor. Is it Michael...
Doug Stamper.
Yeah, but
his name Stamper or the
that's
his character name, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his character name. Now it's like Michael. It's
something. Yeah,
He is one of those character actors. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Yeah, he's in Jack Ryan recently. Stuff,
I think I kind of wish though that it was like somebody I would, once they revealed it, would recognize him, G.I. Joe. When she takes off her hat and her red hair tumbles out, I was like, it's Scarlet.
Right.
Like, I kind of wish it had been that.
That would have been cool. But I also liked the idea that he was basically trying to get Anthony Ramos to join G.I. Joe.
Right.
I mean, he's a military vet. I mean, he definitely has the knowledge and stuff. Mm-hmm. So... introducing this character, if Ramos wants to continue, as sort of a go-between between Transformers and the Joes,
mm-hmm.
that sounds like a really cool idea.
Yeah.
I think he brought so much to the role that he is absolutely, like, the secret weapon of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the actress, I thought, also did a very good job, but, like, he kind of was above and beyond, and we had much more time with him, too.
Yeah.
But, like, he will be a good person to use in there. Like, honestly... he could become one of the known G.I. Joe guys. Like, if you told me after he did some special training with them,
he's Stalker
or something like that, I'd buy into
it. Maybe he'd be Breaker.
He could be Lieutenant Falcon.
Isn't he a communications guy?
Yeah.
He could be Breaker.
Is he a communications guy?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, shit, man, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we talked about this a little bit, that we're all like, Dave
does he have Dial Tone's mustache kind of already?
I mean...
just saying.
Okay, Dave and I are not generally G.I. Joe Transformers people. We like
the
separate.
Combination of
Peanut butter, chocolate, not together.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, this is something that we haven't seen. The G.I. Joe movies kind of did their own thing. They managed to get one good movie out of it.
Yeah.
And it's the second one, by the way. Was it Retaliation?
It's the second one. Retaliation.
Transformers movie's been very hit and miss, but, like, normally don't want them together, but there's some possibilities, and the fact that the comic Void Rivals got off to a pretty good start suggests that, okay, maybe, let's see what you can give me.
I've become more excited, and that was just, like, a 2-minute scene.
Yeah, also, by the way,
as a NCAP, whatever. Well, liked it.
And they opened it up on a kind of like a pit style area, and I was like, "Damn it!"
The idea of G.I. Joe as the force that formed to deal with all this crazy giant robot shit. I'm like, I can kind of roll with that,
right? And Cobra can be some guys who've like taken the weapons, and they're like, oh, they built a weather dominator out of it. Honestly, it's a chance to bring in some of the craziness of the cartoon.
I think this is what they're
while
do.
Grounding it a little bit more and make it a little less campy, I guess.
Is it possible that the comics are going to be kind of like the blueprint for this?
Because I think they're going to be unrelated, but I think it may follow similar
things. May be some influences.
Yeah.
Sort of especially after we saw the... After 9/11 and the Patriot Act, and sort of... suspension of civil liberties, ramping up war effort. Fighting terrorists doesn't quite seem as fun as it did when I was a kid, and so I don't necessarily want, I don't want G.I. Joe as an anti-terrorist thing, because I've kind of seen how that can get perverted in the real world.
But if you make them as sort of that world's, like, Avengers, or kind of like...
And if it's, like, kind of, this is like, in the cartoon... Cobra, like, they didn't have, like, any particular ideology. They were just bad people.
No. Sure was, like, a crazy scientist.
They barely even mentioned that. They didn't even say he was an arms dealer in the cartoon. He was just, like, he was second in command, but who probably should have been a first in command.
And he built things like the Weather Dominator.
He built crazy shit, yeah. They can pull a little bit from that, but yes, a G.I. Joe guys who helps fight, basically evil people with robot technology... I'm potentially open to this.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I think that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next time with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.